Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Do you need a CPA that you can trust with all your taxes and financial needs? Look no further than Joanne Flash Fleming at Fleming & Associates CPA. For more info, go to flashfleming.com or email Joanne directly at joannflemming@flashfleming.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Do you think stories are more important than facts? If you do, stay tuned for this episode about a post-truth era podcast. Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners. Today is Thursday, February 23rd, and I am in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in a repurposed shipping container in the backyard of Roberta's Pizza. Sounds like a little bit of an odd thing to be doing, but for those of you in the know, this repurposed shipping container is the studio of Heritage Radio Network. We've been around since 2009. We are a 501c3charity.org. We have about 32 live shows every week talking about food, from school lunch to farm reports to fermenting, kimchi, cheese, and food tech, which is the show, Tech Bites. I'm Jennifer Leitze, your host. And today, we are going to have a little bit of a special episode. Every now and again, we like to put a, I guess you wouldn't say spotlight on the radio, but put a hot mic in front of some of the folks who help make this show the amazing show that it is. And today that we're going to put that mic in front of David Tatasciore, who is our engineer. You usually hear his voice coming from the control booth as Mission Control. But today he is in the guest seat to talk about his new podcast, What's the Story?
Hey, Jennifer. Long-time listener, first-time guest.
How long have you been waiting to say that?
I thought about that in the shower this morning.
It's very good. It's very like WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. And joining him today is his co-producer and founder of the What's the Story podcast, Brian Farrell, who's a new voice for us.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Every now and again, like I said, it's my show. I get to sort of flip the script and do something different. So I'm excited to have this show because it's coming at an extremely timely moment in the world. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But first, we will do like we always do. We'll go around the shipping container and we'll talk about apps we love, new discoveries, old favorites. And you know the drill, David. You got an app for us?
Yeah, well, continuing on the Dave Tat privacy train, my app this week is called Signal. You may have heard of it. It's a texting, and I believe you can use it for phone calls as well, but it's just like a privacy-based app.
Is it like WhatsApp?
Very similar.
Super encoded, so you can have your calls and send your text without...
encrypted text.
Also, free calls and messaging if you're over Wi-Fi.
Oh, is that right?
Well, for WhatsApp it is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's the case for Signal, but then that means that it doesn't run on your tab of text messaging and things like that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Or phone minutes.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
No.
Okay. So.
You got me.
Signal. S-I-G-N-A-L.
I may or may not have fed him that.
Signal.
Signal, yeah. Yeah, I've installed WhatsApp, but nobody really uses it, so I haven't. Like,
everybody I know uses it.
Really?
Absolutely. Huh. And people use it for big group chats, and I actually discovered it a few years back initially, and have talked about WhatsApp in the app section of this show, because it is, if you're running it on Wi-Fi, the text messaging and the phone calls are free. Oh. So I started using it and installed it when I was traveling outside the country, mm-hmm. because obviously data when you roam to Thailand can be a little bit pricey. But if you're on free Wi-Fi, which there's free Wi-Fi everywhere, then you can send texts and photos and videos and make phone calls, and it's all
just
a Wi-Fi service. Make sure WhatsApp.
Make sure you're using that VPN app I talked about last week.
Yeah, that's a good compendium.
Yeah.
For those of you who have not had an opportunity to listen to last week's show, but I'm sure that that episode is in your podcast queue, David's app was a VPN app to protect his phone from potential danger on free Wi-Fi in the New York City subway transit system.
Correct.
And the name of the app is Opera?
Opera VPN. Yep.
Opera VPN. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
It's a dangerous world.
I know. It's important to stay safe.
Yep.
Watch out for the deep state.
Well, now we're on the radar, Brian. Nice job.
Sorry.
You know, but when you said deep state, I actually immediately thought of like meditation and some sort of like yogi deep state of, you know, transcendental
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you know, I guess.
I didn't go to the enemy of the deep state.
To the dark web.
Yeah, to the dark web and to the 1984 place.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, stay gold.
The less we think about that.
Maybe this is just going to be a collection of just like one-liners and witty comebacks for 45 minutes. Brian, do you have an app that you like?
I do. Since Dave didn't really sell Signal, I could go for that again. And
he got
really
derailed
explain
pretty
it.
Easily. I think WhatsApp actually won that app
it did,
round.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah.
But WhatsApp is owned by Facebook, whereas Signal is developed, I think, sort of by like a team of like people that are really into like this tech security stuff. So if you're really into it, I would recommend it. But I'll go on to another app I had in mind. I was going to talk about Juno, which is a ride-sharing app.
Not the movie.
Right, not the movie, but I think spelled maybe the same way.
Yes.
Yeah. And not the town in Alaska either. But it is a ride-sharing app that is trying to compete with Uber and Lyft by being better to its employees in terms of offering like a better rate.
Percentage.
I think on the
price.
I think they only take 10% from a ride, whereas Uber takes 25% or more. Mm. And they're trying to offer like 50% of like the shares of the company to the employees within the next few years. So it's trying to be this model that is still like, it is a tech startup, and maybe there's questions about that. You know, that'll be raised later, but they're trying to exploit the weaknesses of Uber's kind of bad reputation, at least. Which is snowballing,
almost with every news cycle,
yeah.
I feel like Uber puts out a PR fire, and then it's just on to the next.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I guess the question is, like, can goodwill be enough to grow a company that can compete with one that is like, you know, one of the wealthiest in the world, you know? So I guess they'll see how they can do.
It'll be interesting to see that. I do think that social enterprise as a descriptor and a tag word and a business aspiration is something that came into being with startup culture. Many startups in the tech space, and just generally, many of the startups that are built to be disruptors want to be social enterprises. And for people listening who may not know exactly what that means, it's not a car rental service. Social enterprise means that a for-profit company has philosophy, actions, and work ethic much more aligned with a nonprofit organization. So focused on doing good for the world, being better at business, being better for the planet and the people, but still being a for-profit company. So there's a lot of startups that are social enterprise, and it's actually a moniker for like, oh, we're a startup and we're in tech, but we're social enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they would probably fit in that realm. There was, if you're interested in more about it, there was like an article in the New Yorker recently about them. So they kind of explain their origin story sort of along those lines. But I think it also would be cool if they could, if there was also something that could develop beyond that like sort of realm into like a full-on cooperative run by the workers. I think there's one in Austin, Texas, and so maybe that's another better model even ultimately in the end.
Well, it'll come down to how the customers and the consumers feel, and it'll also come down to how the drivers feel, because the drivers are the people who are the product. I mean, it is a tech platform, all these things, and it becomes ease of use, but at the end of the day, if you don't have drivers driving around, then you don't have a car service company. And my experience has been with drivers who are both Uber and Lyft drivers. They preferred Lyft because they were getting a better deal and more money. So then now add Juno, and then, you know, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. There are interesting times, and, you know, choice and competition are kind of what breed, you know, the best services. And what best is a definition that I think is a little bit of a moving target.
Yeah.
So I will, I realized I hadn't done an app in a while, because I usually write my notes for the show and then I have my app, and then I kept turning, I'm turning back and back and back to the page where I wrote my app, because the last few episodes I haven't had one. So my app is an app called Countable, which has been around since 2014. It started as an online product. It is... basically designed by a man named Joe Trippi, who was one of the pioneers of using social media to fundraise in politics. And this app basically sort of wanted to shift the impact of social media for campaigning and politics to governing and activism. So sort of in terms of the response that people would have to the social media, instead of it being a give money and fundraising, have people's response and action be participation in government, participation in democracy. So it's pretty, it's a pretty interesting app. It is very, very easy to use. It has a really nice interface. It allows you to select different life and political issues that are important to you. You put in your address and your zip code, and then it shows you where, who all of your representatives are. And then it gives you alerts, or you can follow a feed on a screen of what the real-time votes are happening in Senate and Congress, which way your elected officials are voting, what's coming up, what people are saying. So it is, it's kind of, I mean, it's a little like if C-SPAN was an app tailored to your geographical location and your interests, and it can send you as many alerts in real time as you want, or you can go to a feed. You can also follow other people that you know who are in it, and it also has a mechanism for you to comment and respond and reach out to your different elected officials. So it's really interesting, and it's been just going off like a pachinko game over the past couple weeks with all the different things that are happening. But it's a nice way to keep track of what's actually happening in real time in the Senate and the Congress right now, if you're interested in that, versus following whatever the big storylines are in the media. So if you're interested in things in a more granular level, or you're interested in things that maybe aren't in those big news cycle stories, then this is a way for you to keep track of them. Yeah. All easily, yeah. in a handy little app.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to break free of the social media narrative that we're all getting our news from.
Exactly. I mean, it's a way of staying informed about what's actually happening without any editorialization or opinion, sure, or sensationalism or anything like that. So if you're just, you know, it's almost like a ticker for the Senate or the, you know, Congress. It just sort of is going through the different activities in real time, which is helpful sometimes. Sometimes you just want the information and you don't want it coming with, you know, an opinion or an adjective or, you know.
Yeah. This person was eviscerated by this person.
Exactly.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Because I think that's also the emotional side of it, is what makes things so fatiguing.
Yeah.
You know, facts unto themselves necessarily aren't. And fax is a great pivot point into why we're here.
Well done.
Ooh. So, Dave Tat, who is David Tatasciore's outside the Heritage Radio Network persona, he has a website, DaveTat.com,
if
you want to check it out and see all his different projects.
Or, I would actually discourage that.
That's, you know, I looked at the web. I don't think it was bad.
Well, that's the website I use when applying for grad school, so it's sadly out of date right now.
It seemed really... like, okay, no, it had What's the Story and all your current things on it.
Yeah, I think I did make that update, but some other things are just irrelevant at this point. But yeah,
you should have maybe saved that for the break and not said that on air and just put update website on your to-do list.
Too honest, yeah.
But that's okay.
We'll edit that part out.
Yeah, well, go. It's live. We don't edit.
We don't do that. I'm just kidding.
No, we don't.
And you're not steering the ship right now. So.
No, certainly not.
Well, so if you want to see what Dave was like in 2000 whatever as a grad student,
all bright eyed,
you can visit that time capsule.
Yeah,
I did notice you looked a little fresher and you'd had a nap.
Yeah,
so
not world weary yet.
World weary.
Down.
Yep.
Anyway, Dave Tat plays the sound guy.
Yep.
On the What's the Story podcast, he is also doing the sound design, recording, editing, mixing, and producing. You're kind of a jack of all audio trades there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we have Brian Farrell, who created it. It's a really interesting 4-episode podcast that launched in January of this year. And it basically follows the story of a young man named Ray Elliott, who worked as a professional fact checker and kind of had his hopes and dreams crushed when he realized that one of his favorite podcasting series reported a story that wasn't entirely true. So he decided that stories were more important than facts, and he goes out into the world and he puts together and what's the version of air quotes when you're on the radio? He puts together this sort of like radio journalist crew to do radio news programming where facts are loosely regarded if they inhibit the power of the story.
Right.
And it's a comedy and it's fiction. And it's billed as being a podcast for the post-truth era, which, given the whole, like, fake news, real news, environment, comedy, satire that we live in, it seems extremely timely to me. And my question is, obviously, you didn't just make this up in a day and then post it in January. At what point did you start developing this idea, and did you know that you were going to be releasing this at a moment in time when it's funny, but it's kind of not?
Yeah. Well, if I had known, I would have put my efforts into stopping this whole era from, like, beginning in the first place. But since I didn't know, it was...
Go back and kill baby Trump.
Yeah.
Go back in time.
If, well, it's kind of just...
I thought he was going to say, like, go door to door and be more participatory in the electoral process.
That's probably what he meant.
That is what I meant.
Okay.
Yeah, but
just to clarify.
Thank you, because we are being, you know, spied upon by the deep state again. Just kidding. Maybe. Anyway, I...
Maybe we'll get a sad tweet. Okay.
I can only hope.
I digress. So if you had known...
Well, I think... What's interesting is we really approached this show with the idea of it being very much not like connected to politics, at least very heavily, because my everyday job, I'm actually an editor for a news site. And so this was something I viewed
WagingNonviolence.org.
That's right. Yeah. Which confirms why I would not be taking up Dave's campaign against Trump in the exact way he phrased it. But
a little extreme.
It's a political news site sort of about movements and activism. And it's kind of interesting because the idea for What's the Story came up, you know, in 2014, I think. And so, you know, there's still a little bit of time left in the Obama era. I'm running this news site where obviously things are happening in terms of activism. You have Black Lives Matter and like the fight for 15 and all that. But I think in general, people were way less engaged, feeling much more confident in the government's ability to kind of keep things going. And so it was almost like a slow time in a sense. And I saw this opportunity to do a little side project that would be totally unrelated to my everyday political world and just do something fun with my friends who the four out of the five of us were all living together at the time. And so it was just kind of a project that fit everyone's various skill sets. And it seemed like it would just be a fun kind of exercise for me, especially because I've never done really comedy and I haven't really dabbled in fiction since like college.
So this could also have been subtitled a podcast project experiment in cohabitation and co-creation.
It could be, perhaps, yeah.
Sort of like a commune podcast. Yeah. Like put like five people into a Manhattan adjacent apartment. Because yeah. I'm assuming you're in
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Put five people into a Brooklyn apartment and have them make a podcast
yeah.
together.
Yeah. Well, the experiment...
That could have been a show unto itself.
The experiment in that sense may have failed because we're no longer all living together.
Are you still friends with most of them?
You know, and as much as I'm able to do a conversation like this with Dave, you know, but no. We're all very good friends. It just kind of started hitting the mid-30s point where it was time to start, you know.
This is a screenplay for HBO. This is a screenplay for HBO that's adjacent to girls.
Boys. Yeah. Boys.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
Wow.
Judd Apatow, email us.
Yeah.
Email us, techbytes@heritageradionetwork.org.
So, yeah, it's funny then that when we finally, 2 years after starting this project, release it, it's in this totally different moment where everyone is activated and it almost feels wrong to do something or put like any kind of, you know, creative project out into the world that isn't saying something about this moment. And so I am thankful that strangely this concept that we had about like facts and truth and all that like ended up being very relevant in a way we weren't expecting. So that this moment does make the project feel very real and you know it's the way we talk about facts and truth are always present and will continue to be present, hopefully beyond this current presidency. But obviously this raised the stakes in the way we talk about those issues.
I think it dovetailed very nicely into being extremely relevant. I think it would have been engaging and entertaining if it came out a year ago. The fact post-truth era feeling of it makes it very timely. But I would argue also that it's important for people who are creators and artists and, you know, writers and radio producers to continue to do things that are simply for artistic pleasure, artistic endeavor, experimentation. Arts and humanity, I watched the Grammy Awards and the head of the Grammys gave a very, very poignant speech about how, you know, one of the true measures of a great civilization is their arts and their culture and their music. And you could make a strong case that in periods of, you know, political and civil stress, unrest, conflict, it's almost more important to hold on to and continue to look at art and make music and listen to stories and read fiction and poetry and all those kinds of things, because that's how we, you know, maintain our civilization and maintain, you know, sort of that higher thinking, which, you know, when we look at what potentially might happen with the National Endowment for the Arts, I mean, that's just very heartbreaking. And I have to say, you know, again, I said it at the top of the show, Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 charity nonprofit. And we subsist entirely on member donations and underwriting from our sponsors. And so while we think about how grateful we are to those people, we're going to actually take a listen right now and take a break to hear who one of those amazing companies is that helps keep us on the air.
And this one's called Relax, It's Just the End of the World. We'll be right back. Are you filing your own taxes and driving yourself crazy? Do you think a professional can do a better job of finding legal deductions? Do you own a business and need help with the accounting and taxes? Are you a not-for-profit business that needs financial guidance? Are you just plain tired of your boring accountant and looking for some fresh eyes? Try Fleming & Associates CPA. At Fleming & Associates, Joanne Flash Fleming can quantify anything in a flash. She'll do your taxes, assess your worth, and is even a forensic accountant, an investigator of white-collar crime. Joanne Fleming once said,
"It was terribly hard for me to read Moby Dick, but put a financial statement or a tax return in front of me, it's like a novel."
Imagine that. Has the political and financial news got you feeling down? Joanne Fleming was the accountant for the Occupy Wall Street movement back in 2010. Who better to trust with your financial secrets? For more info, go to flashfleming.com or email Joanne directly, joannfleming@flashfleming.com.
Well, if you're just joining us and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bytes, the weekly radio show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk about the intersection of food and technology, usually. Today, we have a fun departure from our usual tech stories. We have in the guest seat our engineer, David Tatasciore, who is here talking about the podcast, What's the Story, that he co-produced with Brian Farrell, the podcast creator. And it's a really fun, fictional, comedic, satirical story about a young man who turned away from his professional life as a fact checker, as a, quote, story ruiner, to go forth into life to be a story
teller. We're just always finishing each other's sandwiches.
It's fun. I listen to it, and I don't want to talk too much about the specifics of what happens in the episodes, because that ruins the surprise of comedy. But I will say, you have a cast of characters that, to me, sort of represented some almost archetypes in the, you know, sort of like Brooklyn hipster world of personas, as well as sort of in the media, grassroots media world. And there's one character who sounds like he's on loan from South Park. Was that intentional? You know who I'm talking about.
I'm assuming you mean Blair, the kind of grizzled veteran
yes,
of the group.
Yes, yeah. Yes. He sounds like a South Park character a little bit.
Interesting.
Well, he's certainly, intended to kind of be the voice that disrupts the show constantly. You know, he's like the
older,
un-PC kind of...
Not digital.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Not hip.
Yeah. He's supposed to kind of play my character's journalism professor, but he's also sort of like this weird mix between Hunter S. Thompson and Christopher Hitchens. So he's like this kind of grizzled kind of, like hard drinking weird guy.
Yeah.
There are so many, you know, references, satirical moments, black comedy, references to pop culture, types of articles, types of stories. I mean, it's very densely packed in terms of the frame of reference you all are drawing from. And it's so broad to me. I'm curious as to who you all envisioned as your target audience, because the people who listen to this, who really enjoy it and get everything, have to be pretty broadly well-read, very up on current events, up on, you know, journalists, some historical points of reference for, you know, culture, history, and media. There's a lot happening in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the one hand, it's clear that we're lovers of radio and podcasting, that type of storytelling. So it's definitely a love letter to that. But then at the same time, you know, we're also, I think, very influenced by a lot of, you know, different comedies, different TV shows. Like for me, Arrested Development was a big touchstone, just the way, like, it's so packed with jokes. It's, like, so dense. And that was something in the editing process that played a big part in some of the decisions that we made. So I think, yeah, to answer your question, you know, we weren't just trying to reach the typical NPR audience. That's certainly a component of it, but I think we were going for a much broader range of just media consumers, really. I mean, in this day and age, or whatever you want to call it, like, we're all just consuming so much media from so many different sources. And I think the show kind of reflects our perhaps over consumption. And that's also, like, looking back at ourselves in a way, like, you know, just reflecting
the cohabitating five who produced it.
Yeah. And to that, I would say that the characters on the show are really just extensions of our real life personas. Like, obviously a little bit more over the top and magnified. Yeah.
One of the extreme characters in your personality.
Oh, me? Just
no, I meant it, the personas were, like, the extreme part of personality.
Oh, I see. Right.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. But you were Mike the sound guy.
Yeah.
So how does that vary from Dave the engineer?
Yeah, I mean, well, I play a much smaller role in the show than everybody else, but that's just sort of, like, you know, the grumpy sound guy archetype, I guess, that I was having a little bit of fun with.
You're generally a very upbeat person.
Yeah,
Or maybe you're grumpier on other shows with other hosts.
I can seal it
here,
well.
Here, you're really
I can seal it. Inside, I'm just a cauldron of boiling rage.
Good to note.
Just kidding.
So how has the show initially been received? And does this, it being out at this point in time, does that make you think you want to continue, do it differently, evolve it? Is it more relevant? You were saying earlier, Brian, that you wonder if you should be doing, you know, stories more impactful in the political vein, if, you know, doing something fictional and comedic is, if this is the time for it.
Yeah. I think you kind of hit on that too earlier, talking about the importance of being creative and the need for arts and all that in this time. I saw actually one of my favorite fiction writers last week, George Saunders. He just came out with a novel, and someone asked him that question about, you know, like, how do you feel putting out this novel in a time when, like, you know, feels like we need all hands on deck working politically. And he said exactly what you said. And so
it also, he probably was working on the novel for the last 5 years,
right,
and not the past 5 months.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, things take time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think going forward, you know, I still think that I would love to continue doing creative work and finding time for that in my life, mainly because now, like, editing stories about movements and activism has become, like, we've just been flooded with content in a way we haven't been before. And I need that balance in my life, as I do, I think, most people. You know, we need to keep our creative minds and juices flowing, especially now and perhaps even more at this time. So even though sometimes it might feel like a sidetrack from where we should be focused, I think it's an important one that keeps, you know, the balance and keeps you from not burning out as well. So I would hope to keep it going in some sense. And we haven't really begun to think, you know, too hard about how we would do that, because, again, it is a side project. So one of the biggest challenges was bringing everyone together to work on it.
And now you all don't live together anymore.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So getting together is now harder and so forth. But it was, I think everyone felt like a real joy to work on. As far as the reception, it's, I guess, similar to most podcasts. It seems like we get really great feedback, like sort of through word of mouth, you know. It's hard to tell who's listening, and then you talk to a friend or a friend of a friend you haven't heard from in a while on Facebook noticed it and has listened, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, energizing to realize that. So it seems like most people that we know, friends of friends and so forth, who've heard it have gotten it in the way we hoped they would, and that's very encouraging.
Yeah, definitely.
So Dave, for you, was it a very different departure from your day to day as a side project? I mean, Brian is working in a primarily written digital context, so for him a podcast and a script is a big departure from his day to day. Was it a little like busman's holiday for you, or
Well,
because this is live and you got to express all of your mixmaster skills?
Yeah, I mean, from a technical standpoint, it is nice to step away from the live to tape thing for a minute and do something more produced. You know, like Brian was saying, that's definitely an issue of balance, and it was really fulfilling to be able to get to do that kind of work. And also just to be able to work with these people, my friends, who are all very creative in their own right. I mean, Brian is a journalist and a writer. Brian McCarthy is an actor. Jerry Tobin, he's a playwright and writer. Ren Pierre, also into comedy, stand-up comedy and writing. So,
and singing.
And singing, of course. How could I forget? So just to be able to bounce ideas off of everybody, and I wasn't involved in the very early stages with the development of the show. That really is the Bryans who carry that torch. But as we got further in the process, you know, of course, there was all kinds of revision and editing and just bouncing ideas off of one another, rewrites, and the editing process itself is a very creative part of it in many ways, because yeah, you're making a lot of technical decisions, but also decisions that shape the flow of the story or the overall narrative. So yeah, being able to work in that way, it was really energizing, and I hope to do it again in some capacity very soon. Yeah,
are you telling me that you'd like us to have an edited show every now and again?
I mean, that's no, and I love doing the live radio stuff, of course. Like,
awkward.
No, not at all. I mean, like, this is just another way to sort of to flex and to use my skills. But
I'm putting you on the spot.
No, I know. But in all seriousness, I mean, we've done some pre-produced content here at Heritage Radio. I encourage everybody to check out On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio, or
Saxelby Radio Scholars is, yep, produced radio, which is wonderful.
And also Inside School Food. We did this amazing piece about Philando Castile, which is probably the best thing I've ever done here. So, it's great to work in all these different kinds of ways.
So what are your plans for what's the story now? You have it. You have the complete series of episodes which take the story to a stopping point. I'm not going to say end, because certainly there's potentially, I think, a lot more that Ray Elliott can do out in the world, but we'll say a stopping point. Are you going to shop it around? Are you going to take it to different things? Are you going to work on the next installment? Or maybe something like, you know, American Horror Story, where it's the same group of people doing something kind of in a similar vein, but a totally different character and storyline, maybe satirical comedy, post-truth, factoid.
That's an interesting
fiction
idea that,
right?
that we hadn't even talked about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I could see your collective sort of lending itself to that, because you have everybody who's plugged into kind of a specific production role, specific production skills. You have a good balance of, you know, kind of voices and ages and male and female and, you know, all those kinds of things, that if you took the same group and, like, you know, shook it up and said, okay, now we're going to do the same idea, but it's going to be,
this,
you know, somebody
instead,
on the,
yeah,
somebody on the campaign trail, or, you know, somebody moves or is abroad, or, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you could, there are so many avenues, but similar to, I think that's one of the most interesting things about American Horror Story. I'm not a huge fan of the show because it's a little scary and creepy. And I don't want scary and creepy right now. I want something a little more.
Yeah, we get enough of like, that in the news.
I like action. I just saw John Wick 2 and loved it. Second only to John Wick 1, which was amazing.
Did he get a new dog?
I don't want to ruin it for people. Okay. He gets a new dog at the end of number 1.
I haven't even seen it. That's the only thing I know about.
Get in the game. Get in the game. John Wick 1 and then John Wick 2.
Okay.
It's good. It's good.
Is there going to be a 3?
It's in production now. Of course there's a 3. It's a trilogy.
Yep.
Everything's a trilogy.
Got a franchise these days.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Got kids to put through school.
But it is interesting the way they have the same people and the same actors and the same writers, and they have a genre and a style, very mm-hmm. stylized thing that they do that, you know, you could certainly take that and develop it into a different storyline and have the same people be different characters and all that kind of thing.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Well, with the podcast boom, I think there's, you know, a lot of ripe material to, I think, kind of harvest from this format that maybe hasn't been played around with yet. I mean, that's sort of where this idea came from, was just listening to This American Life and Radiolab and thinking about like the format of these shows. They're great vehicles for storytelling. They do nonfiction, but I was, the idea was for me, for some reason, even though I work in nonfiction, was like, wow, what could we do with this in the realm of fiction? And so I think there's many different configurations that could happen as the podcast boom continues to grow.
Yeah, it's definitely a niche that I think hasn't been
exploited,
done to death yet.
No,
so
not to its entirety yet. One thing that I was thinking about when I was listening to it, and the Doctors Without MDs episode. So funny.
That was the very first one we wrote. Yeah.
So funny. On so many levels.
Sierra Leone.
Yeah. But it made me wonder if, you know, if you made it just a little sharper and a little bit less fictional and just mm-hmm. a touch sharper, if there could potentially be some confusion as to if it was real or not.
Yeah.
Because we do live in an era where, between, you know, Facebook and Instagram and the different algorithms for how you get, you know, things served up in your social media feed, you don't necessarily know when something has happened or when an article's been written, because people are constantly bubbling up things. You know, I'll click on something and that's, you know, the best Super Bowl nacho recipes of all time, and it'll be from like 2013, which clearly there have been nacho advancements since then.
Clearly.
And also sometimes because of there's news, there's real news, and then there's actual, like The Onion, fake news and satire and comedy, Saturday Night Live, and, you know, things like that where things bubble up. But sometimes even a newspaper in a foreign country can take something that was actually comedy and run it in the newspaper as real news. So I wonder if there's also just this funny fine line where someone could stumble across something and be like, oh, have you heard of this Doctors Without MD thing?
I was going to say, like, the fact that there even exists the saying or hashtag Not The Onion speaks volumes. I mean, that you have to point out when, oh no, this is
it's
one thing.
Right.
It's not.
And even when it's very smartly done, like in The New Yorker, I think a lot of their satirical humor pieces are
Andy Borowitz.
So close. And you almost sometimes, is that an article in The New Yorker, or is that comedy?
Yeah. I think they started having to put a disclaimer on that, didn't they?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we'll have to worry about that with our show.
How funny would that be, though?
Yeah.
That could be like your goal.
That sketch you mentioned is the most like straightforward one, and maybe we'd have to think about.
And then with the quote from the government official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're trying to replicate the success of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe you're right. Maybe Sierra Leone will be looking for this fictitious organization that is apparently. Yeah.
Well, you need to get your Google AdWords, Google search game on so that when people are searching like Sierra Leone conflict, you're the first hit.
Oh, boy. We can be consultants.
Yeah.
That would be funny. Well, we're not just out of time. We're over time because Dave's in the guest seat and not in the booth, kind of like waving his finger in the air at me. I want to thank Dave for taking the long walk from the control booth to the studio and sitting down in the chair and sharing a another side to his production life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Entertaining one. I want to thank Brian for coming out and talking about What's the Story.
Thank you very much. Great to be doing live radio, even
yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't look like I need to do scripted radio only.
No, well, it's conversational. Conversation's nice, and because we don't have to edit it, then it just sort of, it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
It was. I very much enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, if you want to listen to What's the Story, and I encourage you all to do that, there is a website you can check out. You can also get it on iTunes, Stitcher, and an RSS feed off of the website.
Also TuneIn and Google Play.
Thank you, Voice from the Booth. Did you hear the difference in his booth and in his voice just now from how it was before?
Much more gravitas back here.
Do you have better mics in there?
No. Oh. They're better in the studio.
Interesting, because you sound better in there.
Maybe I just know how to use this one better than those.
You sound like the guy who does the voiceover for your commercials.
That's weird. I'll have to have HR look into that.
If you enjoyed this conversation and would like to hear more like it, check out Tech Bytes. We are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and on heritageradionetwork.org. If you really loved it, subscribe to it. Leave us a 5-star review. If you think you can't live without it, if you think you can't live without good conversations and stories and voices and a platform for people to share their stories about food, go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart, and, you know, throw us what you spent on coffee today as a donation. We could really use it. It'll help us keep the lights on and make more radio, so that I can say, come back and see me next week, Thursday, at 11 a.m. for Tech Bytes. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.